There was actually a suggestion of possible harm with the use of high flow nasal cannula in that COPD group.
So these patients didn't present super sick with a severe respiratory acidosis.
Historically, high flow nasal cannula crept into our practice, and it's been looking for literature to validate that creep.
Welcome back, everyone, to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. This is Mike Winters from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, wishing all of you a very, very happy new year as we start 2025. So thankful that you all are joining us for this podcast here to get us started with the new year. And we have an outstanding topic to discuss based on a hot off the press paper that was just published online really within the last month. Late December here, so a late 2024 article on two therapies that we use very frequently in the ED along with the ICU in caring for critically ill patients with acute respiratory failure. But before we get to that, kind of giving you the teaser about the education for this month's podcast, as you know, it's been a few weeks since we have posted a podcast recording. We hope all of you had an amazing holiday season, got to spend some time, well-deserved time, with loved ones, and really now we're getting started with the new year. Dr. Greenwood, let me check in with you first. How was the holidays for you, and how are things going to present?
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, the holidays were wonderful. I had some time off around the Christmas holiday, was in the emergency department around late December through the New Year's holiday. And I'm sure all of you out there, especially those in the emergency departments, are feeling the crunch of cold, flu, RSV season. But definitely those numbers are on the rise, and that's put some strain on our department as well. Record number of patients in our waiting room waiting for beds in the hospital. So to all of you out there who are having similar challenges, you're not alone. We're working through it as well.
Thanks, John. Great point. You reminded me just of my last few ED shifts. Yeah, Influenza A seems everywhere, at least out here where we're at with respect to Baltimore and Philadelphia. And we are in the same boat with respect to record numbers of admissions, boarding, and extended ED waiting room times. Not so much, I guess, a moderate level of COVID, but certainly influenza seems to be almost, I don't know, one in every few patients I'm seeing at the present time here in Baltimore. Well, Dr. W, going to you, checking in, how were the holidays and how are things in New Orleans?
Well, the early holidays were just fine. It was fantastic, great time to be in New Orleans. And then the Bourbon Street tragedy for New Year's Eve. And just a shout out to our first responders and those folks in the emergency department dealing with mass casualty, as well as the folks in California with the current fires and just how awful that is and how everybody's life is just completely disrupted. And so tough time to be a first responder, tough time to be in emergency medicine, particularly in those areas, not just the overcrowding that we're all dealing with across the country, but in those spots, praise for those people who run towards the fight, not away from it.
Very well said, Dr. W. Very well said. Well, you mentioned that already with respect to California. So let's jump from Louisiana over to California, check in with Dr. Rodriguez. Rob, how are things?
Doing well out here. And I want to second that shout out to all of our friends and family in the EDs down in LA, especially all of you UCLA who are dealing with that tragedy. Otherwise, things are going well, and looking forward to the start of this new year.
All right. Well, with that, let's turn now back to our education for this podcast. And I mentioned that we are going to talk about a hot off the press article dealing with two modalities that we very frequently use in patients with acute respiratory failure, and that is high flow nasal cannula along with non-invasive ventilation. And the particular article that we are going to review is by the RENOVATE investigators. Actually, it's called or termed the RENOVATE trial. And this was titled High Flow Nasal oxygen versus non-invasive ventilation in patients with acute respiratory failure and was published first online in early December 2024 in JAMA, once again by the Renovate investigators. Peter, I'm going to turn back to you. If you could set the stage for this particular study, really give us a little bit of background before we lead into just the nuts and bolts of the study itself.
Happy to, Mike. When we think about it and we look at those people who present to emergency departments with acute hypoxic respiratory failure, we know that both non-invasive ventilation as well as high flow nasal cannula are being used to treat these patients. Patients may not actually tolerate the mask fit and the seal with non-invasive ventilation due to just the discomfort and pressure, as well as the high flow pressure being blown by the non-invasive ventilations. We know that high flow nasal cannula compared to low flow oxygen has been shown to improve oxygenation. It does reduce dead space. It can improve alveolar recruitment. It can enhance clearance of secretions. And we know that depending on which tools we use to deliver it, it can be both heated and humidified. So it tends to be better tolerated sometimes than the non-invasive ventilation. High flow nasal cannula has been shown to reduce PaCO2 levels in those patients with acute COPD exacerbations, in those patients with acute decompensated heart failure. Can decrease cardiac preload. That's that positive pressure ventilation piece. And we've also known that the high flow nasal cannula can improve signs of respiratory failure in patients with acute heart failure. We know that high flow nasal cannula is fundamentally easier to use and typically rated as more comfortable when compared to non-invasive ventilation of CPAP and BiPAP. However, we know that humidified high flow nasal cannula may be less effective than non-invasive ventilation, BiPAP and CPAP, in reducing the work of breathing during acute undifferentiated respiratory failure. We also know that current guidelines recommend non-invasive ventilation for acute respiratory failure caused by COPD. Exacerbations and acute cardiogenic pulmonary edema. That's our go-to. However, the evidence for these recommendations is based on comparisons with low-flow oxygen delivery systems, not high-flow nasal cannula. Presently, there remains uncertainty regarding the effectiveness of high-flow nasal cannula when compared to non-invasive ventilation for acute hypoxic respiratory failure. So, what's the objective for this study? Well, the objective here is to evaluate the non-inferiority of high-flow nasal cannula compared with non-invasive ventilation, and also to assess the potential superiority in reducing the rates of intubation and death in five separate patient groups with acute respiratory failure.
Outstanding. Well said, Dr. W. That really sets the stage for this particular study. Very interested, actually, in the results because I feel that we're using high flow nasal cannula with increasing frequency for many indications. So, with that, Dr. Greenwood, I'm turning it over to you. What was the Renovate trial?
Yeah, so this was a pretty sophisticated trial design. It was a multi-center adaptive randomized control trial to assess non-inferiority. And this was performed in 33 hospitals in Brazil. And before we get any further, I have to say it's really great to see an increasing number of publications in high-impact research journals coming from these growing critical care research groups in South America and other low middle income countries. I think that these are really important to disseminate and to also share how practice can change and be performed outside of more developed and higher income countries like the United States. So shout out to them. Awesome job. The patients that they included were adults greater than 18 who presented to the ED or were admitted to the ICU or hospital ward with acute respiratory failure. And the study classified patients as acute respiratory failure if they had a pulse ox less than 90% or a PO2 less than 60 on room air. They also had to have increased respiratory effort defined by accessory muscle use, paradoxal breathing, or basically respiration desynchrony, and be tachypneic with a respiratory rate greater than 25. And once they had that initial inclusion criteria, they were divided into five patient groups. They were the non-immunocompromised group with hypoxemia, immunocompromised with hypoxemia, COPD exacerbation with respiratory acidosis, acute cardiogenic pulmonary edema, and then hypoxemia with COVID-19. And I think these five patient groups represent the classic patient populations that we've learned through the years have some sort of clinically and research-related significant improvement with non-invasive ventilation of some sort. They did exclude a few different categories of patients, and those were those who needed urgent intubation, those with hemodynamic instability, and those with contraindications to non-invasive positive pressure ventilation. Now, if we look at the interventions, once these patients met inclusion criteria, they were randomized 1-to-1 to high-flow nasal cannula or non-invasive. And for high flow, it was delivered continuously with a flow rate of 30 liters a minute at first for COPD, especially those with acidosis, and 45 liters a minute for the other four groups. Okay, so a little bit of lower flow with the COPD population. It was gradually titrated up to 60 liters a minute or the highest amount of flow that was tolerated. As far as the FiO2 portion of high flow nasal cannula, they start at 50% and then titrated up to maintain a pulse ox saturation of 88 to 92% for those with COPD and a little bit higher, 92 to 98% for the other four groups. After 24 hours, weaning from high flow could begin if clinical improvement was achieved. Now, for non-invasive rescue therapy, that was permitted for the COPD group and the acute cardiogenic pulmonary edema group, and that was pretty much at the physician discretion. Now, as far as the intervention for non-invasive, that was delivered by standard face mask, and the inspiratory pressure for COPD patients was set to 12 to 16 centimeters of water, and then for the other groups, 12 to 14, so a little bit of a lower inspiratory pressure, and that could be titrated to a max of 20 centimeters of water altogether. And the PEEP or the EPAP, that was a little bit lower for COPD patients, so 4 centimeters of water. And then for the rest of the patients enrolled in the trial was set at 8 centimeters of water. And that also could be titrated to a maximum of 12 centimeters of water overall. The FiO2 portion of non-invasive was set to maintain a saturation of 88 to 92% for COPD, as we saw with the high flow group, and also 92 to 98% for the other groups. Now, interestingly, for the non-invasive part, they did target a tidal volume of 6 to 9 mLs per kilo of ideal body weight. So I think that was pretty interesting and also reasonable that they were being thoughtful about the tidal volumes being delivered to make sure it was generally within a lung protective ventilation range. Now, as far as the primary outcome goes, they looked at intubation or death at 7 days. Secondary outcomes were looked at, including 28 and 90 day mortality, mechanical ventilation free days at day 28, ICU free days at day 28, total length of stay in the ICU at 90 days, and vasopressor free days also at day 28. The statistical analysis was, as I said, fairly sophisticated in that they used a Bayesian adaptive statistical methods to assess the primary outcome. And they set a non-inferior margin that was established based on an absolute effect of 36% for non-invasive on the rate of intubation. So it's not worth, for the purposes of this podcast, to get into Bayesian analysis methods of statistical design and analysis. But ultimately, they had set a priori or ahead of time what their likelihood of success was, and that's what they followed for the purposes of this trial.
Outstanding. A whole lot to unpack there, Dr. Greenwood. You did an absolutely fabulous job going through the methods. With a lot of numbers there, let me just ask you, do you feel that this represents clinically how we use high-flow nasal cannula and non-invasive ventilation with those settings?
Yeah, in general, I think this is a pretty practical approach to initiating high-flow nasal cannula, starting with a lower flow rate and titrating up, as well as starting at a reasonable FiO2 target numbers, a little bit lower for COPD and a little bit higher for maybe the hypoxemic respiratory failure, seemed reasonable. Now, it is interesting that they defined their hypoxemia inclusion of 90% or PO2 of 60 on room air. But certainly, I think if I was to make that decision for high flow, I'd start at those settings and titrate up to the targets that they outlined for both their high flow and their non-invasive groups.
All right, Dr. Rodriguez, it is your turn. Was high flow nasal cannula non-inferior to non-invasive ventilation? What are the results of the RENOVATE trial?
So they enrolled a total of 1,766 patients, exactly equally distributed between the two groups, 883 in the high flow group and 883 in the non-invasive ventilation group. There are a couple of really notable points on this. They stopped enrollment for futility in the immunocompromised with hypoxemia group at the first interim analysis, basically right away. They stopped enrollment at the fifth interim analysis for the hypoxemic COVID-19 group and at the sixth interim analysis for the non-immunocompromised with hypoxemia and ACPE groups. So bottom line is they conducted multiple interim analyses and they stopped pretty early in the immunocompromised with hypoxemia group. Also of note, 40% of the patients were randomized either in the ED or on the hospital ward. So a substantial component of ED patients here. In terms of the patient groups, they enrolled 485 patients in the non-immunocompromised with hypoxemia group, 50 patients in the immunocompromised with hypoxemia group, 77 COPD patients, 272 acute cardiogenic pulmonary edema patients, and 882 hypoxemic COVID-19 patients. So notably, a lot of COVID patients, which makes sense considering the time of this study and it occurring in Brazil, which was highly affected by COVID. So in terms of results and their primary outcome, high flow was found to be non-inferior in the main group and all of the subgroups. The primary outcome was 39% in the high flow group and 38.1% in the non-invasive ventilation group. Then in terms of looking at it from the five different groups, in the COPD group, the high flow group had 28.6% that had the primary outcome. Non-invasive ventilation had 26.2%. In the acute cardiogenic pulmonary edema, the high flow group had 10.3% as compared to 21.3% in the non-invasive ventilation group, which seems to be a notable difference in terms of absolute percentages, but did not reach statistical significance. Looking at the hypoxemic COVID-19 group, again, the largest group of patients in this study, the primary outcome was found in 51.3% of the high flow group and 47% of the non-invasive ventilation group. With regard to the non-immunocompromised with hypoxemia group, the high flow had 32.5%, and the non-invasive ventilation group had 33.1%. And then finally, in terms of the immunocompromised group with hypoxemia, again, there were sizable differences in percentages, with the high flow having 57.1% and non-invasive ventilation having 36.4%. But that absolute difference of 20% did not meet statistical significance. In terms of looking at the secondary outcomes, there were no differences between the treatment groups for the two groups at large, as well as the five divided groups. And the adverse events were similar between groups as well. So again, the results indicate that high flow is non-inferior to non-invasive ventilation for the group as a whole and all of the subgroups.
All right. Thanks so much, Dr. Rodriguez. That's awesome. Let me just hit a few limitations, and then I really want to go back to the three of you for your thoughts on the clinical application of the RENOVATE trial. With respect to some limitations here, I think, John, you may have mentioned this in the methods, but crossover was allowed with respect to the COPD group with non-invasive ventilation, and it actually occurred in almost one out of every four patients with respect to the high flow nasal cannula actually had non-invasive ventilation applied with acute COPD exacerbations. And you also alluded to this, that the statistical analysis of the trial was fairly complex. And without getting into much more specifics, when the authors went and did their post hoc analysis, there was actually a suggestion of possible harm with the use of high flow nasal cannula in that COPD group. And if you recall what Rob had just said about the overall primary outcome, both in the high flow nasal cannula group along with non-invasive ventilation, that primary outcome of death or intubation at day seven was pretty high for this group. And that may not be reflective necessarily of other patient populations. With respect to a few other limitations, a minor one here, that non-invasive ventilation was used primarily with a face mask interface, knowing that there are other interfaces, but I would say that I think the majority of us would use a face mask as the interface. And then with respect to stopping for futility, Rob, you mentioned this early on, that they actually stopped enrollment after the first interim analysis in the immunocompromised with hypoxemia arm secondary to futility. Those are a few major limitations, but really if we take a step back, the authors would say that overall high flow nasal cannula was non-inferior to non-invasive ventilation as it pertained to rates of intubation or death at 7 days for acute COPD with respiratory acidosis, acute cardiogenic pulmonary edema, COVID-19 with hypoxemia, along with patients who are not immunocompromised but present with hypoxemia and acute respiratory failure. So, Rob, I'm going to start with you and say, should we take away from the RENOVATE trial, should we be moving wholesale to really utilization of high flow nasal cannula first in these patient subgroups? What say you?
What AI is that I'm not ready to abandon non-invasive ventilation as my first intervention for the COPD group. In all of the other groups, I think that this study is very helpful in showing that you certainly should consider this because of comfort as a first-line therapy for, for hypoxemia and even cardiogenic pulmonary edema. That intuitively makes sense to me, and the findings of this study reinforce that as your probable best first-line therapy. The crossover data on the COPD group, however, gives me great pause. And just from my clinical experience, I still believe in non-invasive ventilation for your true COPD patient as being probably the best first-line therapy. Again, high flow, while it does clearly improve and address physiological derangements in hypoxemia, it doesn't intuitively do as much when your problem is ventilation and fatigue, and especially that fatigue factor that we see in our COPD patients. That, for me at least, is the reason that I'm going to continue using non-invasive ventilation as my first line therapy.
Really great thoughts there, Rob. John, I'm going to go to you next.
Yeah, guys, I agree with Rob completely. I think it's important to keep in mind that this was designed to be a non-inferiority trial. So I have 2 points I think to take away from this. Number one, the showing of non-inferiority makes me kind of approach this as, okay, if I have a person who I'm concerned has respiratory distress, can I use high flow nasal cannula up front while I'm trying to figure out what's going on? And then once I determine an accurate diagnosis, then I can go on to choose whatever modality I think is right. I think the data from this trial helps me with that decision. But I also think it's important that we recognize that they may not have been very sick to begin with. If you look at the table one of the trial, and we look at even something as simple as the pH or the degree of respiratory acidosis in the COPD population, for example, the median pH was 7.32 and 7.3, and there was a range around that between 7.25 about and 7.35. So these patients didn't present super sick with a severe respiratory acidosis. So if I got my first blood gas here, I wouldn't reach for high flow nasal cannula if my pH was 7.2 or less. I think that would, and their PCO2 was super high. I don't think that physiologically makes sense. And I don't think the data from this trial supports that practice. In addition, the PaO2s of a lot of these patients were also not that low. So I do think it's important to put this into context of how sick these patients were and what degree of respiratory failure they had on enrollment. Because it's possible that if they weren't sick enough, then there was never going to be a separation between them to show a clinical difference that might be meaningful to actual practice.
Well, both you and Rob, expert analysis there and feedback and thoughts. We're going to now turn to Dr. W to bring us home, summarize, and then tell us what to do.
Well, it's tough to add to that because both Rob and John made great points. We know historically that this high flow nasal cannula was a boon, particularly during COVID times, right? So it's crept into our practice and it's been looking for literature to validate that creep. And so people are applying it without really having the strongest evidence. This paper was designed to kind of do that. But to John's point, it's a non-inferiority study. It's not the best design to say it's a difference maker. This is why you should choose one over the other. I think that we continue to have complex patients, whether you're talking about acute decompensated heart failure or about COPD. And COPD has the greatest heterogeneity of just about any disease that exists. If you think about the pink puffer, the blue bloater, you think about the asthmatic, there are all these different physiologies at play, and saying that high flow nasal cannula is equivalent to BiPAP, hold on a second there, because I can't titrate that high flow nasal cannula like I can titrate a BiPAP, whether it's on the inspiratory component for those patients that may have a greater CO2 retention, and I want to offload that work of breathing. I think that non-invasive allows me to do that. So I'm not sold that they're equivalent, and I'm not sold that these disease populations were either sick enough to say high flow nasal cannula deserves a leg up on non-invasive. So apart from saying I might start with high flow nasal cannula from a comfort level and then get more information. And if that information points to somebody who needs a little bit more support or titration of support, I might yield to non-invasive.
Really great thoughts by all three of you. Much appreciated in terms of that analysis and take home from the Renovate trial. I know I'm not going to add to the expert analysis with respect to the thoughts. I'm going to go back to something, John, that you said that I think our listeners really can take home is that the patient comes in, they have acute respiratory failure, they're hypoxemic, and you're working through the differential as to what is the etiology and do they fall into one of these five groups here, starting off and utilizing high flow nasal cannula to start treating the patient and then get your diagnostics results, treatments going to where it becomes more clear, and then choosing wisely about continued respiratory support and therapy from there. I think sounds really like a nice way to go and approach based upon this paper. Would that be a fair statement to say?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's really reasonable, especially in an undifferentiated patient.
Agreed.
All right. Well, with that, I know this is an in-depth paper, lots of really methods behind it, a lot of data behind it, and really appreciate the outstanding discussion, Peter, John, and Rob. If any of you have questions, comments, feedback with respect to the Renovate trial, or would like to hear a specific topic upcoming here on a CCPEM podcast, please reach out. Let us know. Once again, Happy New Year. We are so looking forward to 2025 with you and discussing a tremendous amount of great educational content, reviewing hot off the press literature, and working with you on the resuscitation and care of critically ill patients in the ED and in the ICU. With that, let's bring this podcast to a close, and we will look forward to talking to you on our next podcast. Bye for now.